Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show, episode 908 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Dalamore, and I'm joined today, as I always am, by the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly Brittany Page, everybody.
I've seen a lot of people posting, you know, like on 9/11, when people would talk about where they were when 9/11.
Never forgetting?
Exactly, never forgetting, and people will talk about where they were when 9/11 happened. I've started to see some posts about where people were when they realized the pandemic was happening, because it's around this time, 4 years ago, that things kind of shut down.
Yeah.
And
crazy times.
I know, I cannot believe it's been 4 years. And I remember where I was, and don't know if we want to get into that. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that we are going to be speaking for an organization, the Triangle Freethought Society, on April 6th. And
in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes. And we were actually going to be doing this speaking event for this organization when the pandemic happened, and yeah, we had to cancel the trip, and
not have our airplane tickets refunded. Thank you very much, American Airlines. Good times had by all. Dicks.
I was going to say that, but I also wanted to preface it because I don't want Marcus to feel guilty or like it's his fault at all.
Hello, Marcus.
Longtime supporter of the show, longtime friend of the show, Marcus.
Fucking awkward.
It is not your fault that American Airlines refused to give me my money back. They did give me a credit, and they were like, here, use this at some point. And I was like, no, it never worked out. And then I lost the credit.
Well, it didn't work out because we were in the middle of a pandemic for years and years and years. And then when we finally went to go use it, they were like, no, fuck you, too long.
Yeah. So... So we will be speaking at this event April 6th. If you are in North Carolina and you want to come, apparently the event is going to be open to anyone who wants to come, even if you're not a member of this organization. So we will put a link to the event page in the show notes so that you are able to figure out what we're doing here. And we're just going to talk about, I guess, our backgrounds and how we came to believe what we believe and what we do on the show, basically. Yeah.
It'll be a good time. And also the first time we've done, I mean, we moderated a quote-unquote debate between Michael Shermer and some other academics once. So we've done live speaking, but not where we're like the highlighted speakers.
Yeah. So I guess we should just talk about where we were when the pandemic happened, or the moment that we realized the pandemic was actually happening. And for me, I was at work. I was working for a county program in California, and I was getting ready to start one of my group therapy sessions where I was going to be forced into a room with 12 other people. And I remember getting to work and feeling a lot of anxiety about starting this group and having that many people in the room, because we didn't know anything yet. You know, I mean, we're talking about this now where we have all of the information. Then we had no information. And I was really nervous to do the group, and there was like talk of splitting it in half and doing 30 minutes with six people and 30 minutes with the rest of the people. And then it just ended up being canceled. And I just had to go out there and have everyone sign a sheet and take like a packet to take home. And that was when it became real. That was when I knew something was wrong.
Yeah, I don't remember the specific date for like what I was doing, but I do remember when I really started taking it seriously as like, oh shit, this is going to be a thing. I mean, even at the time I thought, oh, this will last for 6 months. I had no idea that years and years later, we would still be dealing with the ramifications of that pandemic and the fecklessness of how it was dealt with the previous administration, Trump. And, but we were out at dinner with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we got alerts on our phones that the NBA had canceled the season.
Oof.
No, and that's a big deal. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh, this is, they obviously have their finger on the pulse. They know what's going on. And if they're taking this drastic measure, it must be a real big thing. Also, a Chinese place that we used to go to that was pretty authentic, like, every time we were in there, we were the only white people in there. They started wearing masks very early on and even doing temperature checks on our foreheads to even get in. And we were like, ooh, this is, they must know something because no one else is acting like this.
Yeah, there were signs for sure leading up to this happening. Because I remember even going to the grocery store and we were, I think you called it doomsdaying it. You're like, everyone's going to know we're doomsdaying it right now because we were buying a lot of canned goods and we were buying a lot of supplies that you would get when you know you're not going to be able to go to the store as easily or you're going to have to be home a lot. And so there were signs that something was happening. There was a lot of denial at this time too.
Yeah.
Like there were conspiracy theories that were popping up. And given that we are two people that are not prone to conspiracy theories, we were accepting that something serious was happening, but it is strange to just reflect on it being 4 years and how difficult that period was, how many people lost their lives because yeah. of vaccine disinformation and a lot of anti-science skepticism. And it's really disturbing. And I mean, it's not like it's over, right? People are still getting sick. People are still dying. And it's just...
And people are still in denial about the efficacy of the science behind vaccines.
Yeah, and people are struggling with the ramifications of long COVID. There's all kinds of things that are wrapped up in this. But good for Aaron Rodgers, who's a vaccine skeptic guy, and he's, you know, in the news. We'll talk about him a little later.
Oh,
but
what an idiot. I mean, really just outing him. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Wow. So today's episode, a portion of today's episode, is brought to you by Uplift Standing Desks. And we're going to cut to an ad from them first, and then we're going to move on with the show. Finding the right materials and tech to fit your working environment can be tough. With our podcast spaces, we went through a bunch of different desks and chairs while searching for a flexible setup that worked best for us. That setup? Our Uplift Standing Desk.
As the New York Times Wirecutter's standing desk pick for 5 years running, Uplift Desk doesn't just aim to improve your work, but your health as well. Studies show that using a standing desk can heighten your mood and focus, and moving more throughout the day lowers your risk of disease.
We absolutely love our Uplift Desk because we can go from sitting to standing height with one press of a button while prepping for and shooting the show. It's also super stable and comes with cable management accessories to help conceal all those wires. Customize your Uplift Desk with over 100 desktop styles and hundreds of accessories. You'll get 4 free when you buy a desk.
Elevate your work and your health. Go to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt to get 5% off your first purchase when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Uplift Desk has 6,000 five-star Google reviews and counting, so we're not the only people singing their praises. And with a 15-year warranty, free shipping, free returns with free return shipping, you cannot lose if you try them out. Uplift your health and productivity.
Just head to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt or click the link in the description to score 5% off of your order when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Work better, live healthier with Uplift Desk. So thank you to Uplift Standing Desk for again, sponsoring a portion of today's episode. We are thrilled to have them. Let's get to some listener communication. This is part of the what has made this show, I think, unique relative to podcasts for many years, over 10 years now, is the ability for the audience to sound off and get their voice on the record, ask a question, make a comment, tell us how terrible we are. All of that is inbound. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
So we want to preface this voicemail before we play it because it is related to a YouTube video that I did, actually. Ben Shapiro recently came out and said that retirement is a stupid idea. And I found this fascinating because, of course, we all know he's a rich guy. So retirement doesn't really matter to him because right. he has piles of money and he doesn't have to worry about how much money he has for retirement or how much he's going to be collecting in Social Security. That's not a concern that he has.
And at this point, his job is a hobby.
Yeah, his job is basically a hobby, right? And so, of course, he's not concerned with retirement. He thinks he can do his job for however long it takes, and then he'll, you know, have more relaxing days than working days. And of course, that's not how most people live their lives. Most people are working 40 plus hours a week. They're working multiple jobs. They're struggling to achieve a healthy work-life balance. And the years that they have of retirement are something that mean a lot to them. And so given Ben Shapiro's approach, and it's not just him, it's conservatives, right? They're going after the Social Security funding. They want to cut benefits. They want to increase the retirement age, even though it's already been increased. And so we got a voicemail related to this topic.
Hello. My husband is 60... almost 62. He has worked hard jobs for all his life, mostly. Well, the past 40 years at least. Labor, very labor-intensive jobs. Working on barges, pulling heavy equipment, and he is feels like he is falling apart. He can't sleep. He barely, like you said, has enough daylight to do anything when he gets home, working from daylight to almost dark, and sometimes way after dark. And he feels like he's falling apart. He said, I'm going to have to work until the day I die. So that's what the Republicans want people to do. Work until they are on their fucking deathbed. Because that's the way my husband feels like he's going to have to do. Thank you.
Why is it so hard for people to understand that they're voting against their best interest, not even their best, just their simple, basic, general interest by voting Republican when you are a laborer, when you're not an Elon Musk or a Ben Shapiro? You're gonna work until he's on his deathbed. According to Ben Shapiro, he should be working long beyond that, up until the day of death, the moment of death. He should be a cog in the machine to create profit from his labor for somebody else.
Right. And that was really, I mean, you can go watch the video, not to like promote my YouTube video, but
what do you mean not to? Why not?
Yeah, go watch it, because he really does say retirement is a stupid idea unless you have a health problem, because he believes you should work forever.
Yeah.
And let Republicans keep saying that. Let them keep saying that they want everyone to work until they're dead, that that's their philosophy. Let them keep saying that.
Well, it always comes from someone who's never done a single hour of manual labor in their entire life.
Right.
Ben Shapiro is a type that is so alien to him. anything related to actual hard work, that when he goes to Home Depot to support him, he buys a little plank of wood and sticks it in the plastic Home Depot bag.
Look at my wood.
Look at my wood. Look at my little wood, Mommy. It's just, he's out of touch, unbelievably arrogant and disgusting, that take. And you hammered it, all the points home. Quite well.
Well, and it's funny that this caller, this anonymous caller, highlighted what I had said about the number of hours of sunlight that someone has left in their day, because I isolated that for a TikTok. And I remember I came up to you after I had posted, after I had been up for a while, and I was like, is that too depressing? Like, was what I said about all that too depressing? And he's like, no, it's real life. And so when I heard this call, I was like, I'm really glad that that is resonating, because while it may be depressing to think about the way that our society is structured, there is a party that is working to reinforce that system. And there is a party, although imperfectly, working to improve that system.
Yeah.
And I think highlighting those differences is where the hope comes in, of there are people that are working to change the system and there's people working to uphold the system. And which side do you want to be on?
Yeah. Well, let's not just let us have the last word. We'll give the last word to good old Ben Shapiro.
I will comfort myself tonight by sleeping on my bed made of money.
Thank you, Ben. We know you will, little brother. We know you will.
At least he's honest. All right, we have an email here. Hi, Jesse and Brittany, and hi, Sweepy. Sweepy, of course, is our bulldog, and it is always heartwarming when people say hello to our dog.
She doesn't appreciate it because she doesn't hear it.
She would love it if she could hear it, though. She loves attention. I have wanted to reach out to you all for a while now, and I have to say I've tried writing this email a few times. I want to tell you there is no way I express just how much I appreciate you guys talking about Nex Benedict. I'm a Tulsa resident, and I am about a 20-minute drive away from the high school Nex was attacked in. There were numerous candlelight vigils throughout the state, and I attended the Tulsa vigil. The Tulsa vigil was at the Guthrie Green on Greenwood, so I was standing in the very same place of the 1921 race massacre. To live in this place and to be conscientious about discrimination and violence against minorities, women, and children is incredibly difficult sometimes. To be surrounded by people who perpetuate the same deadly rhetoric keeps me in fear. I'm the same age as the Columbine shooters, and I remember when I was in high school how much the bullying I received increased after the Columbine shooting. My son is the same age as the kids killed at Sandy Hook. I remember crying every day on my way to pick him up from school. I would cry because I can't imagine the pain of losing a child, and I was grateful he made it one more day, and I would even feel guilty about my gratitude. When he was in middle school, his school was vandalized with anti-Islamic graffiti and broken windows. We pulled him out and started homeschooling our kids. When my daughter was in elementary, she was bullied by students and faculty for being non-religious. We didn't even know about it until she was already in homeschooling. It was easy to homeschool her during COVID, but she wanted to be in a brick and mortar school for high school. Now my daughter is the same age as Nex was. She is gender fluid and uses she/they pronouns. I fear for her safety daily. She happens to be in probably the most progressive and safe high school in the state, but I still worry. I have vague childhood memories of Ruby Ridge on the news and later Waco. I was in middle school when Tim McVeigh bombed Oklahoma City. I remember where I was when 9/11 happened, and so many shootings, and I just feel hopeless sometimes. I believe we're a nation for people traumatized from experiencing one senseless tragedy after another. You guys keep me sane, and Jesse, your righteous indignation is everything to me. I wish you could know how much I appreciate you saying fuck straight off when talking about trans rights. Thank you both so much. I love you all, including Sweepy, and fuck straight off is the best part.
Made me emotional.
We can give an update about Nex Benedict.
I just want to say one thing that's tangentially related, but not specifically to the Nex Benedict thing, and that is, I would have this be instructive to a lot of people out there who, are constantly banging on about just write off Texas, just fuck them, let them secede. Who cares what Oklahoma does? Who cares what Alabama does? Who cares about Mississippi? They've they voted these people in, they signed their death warrant, blah, 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 blah. It's just not the way it is. There are hundreds of thousands, if not maybe millions of people, certainly millions across Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Oklahoma, who are good and decent people who just happen to live in a fucking terrible place. Same with Idaho. We can't, as progressives, as Democrats, as lovers of humanity, write off massive portions of the United States because the majority happens to be fascist approving or fascist leaning. Anyway, that just came to mind. And
that's a great point. I forgot that you usually take over for me when I'm crying, but you are able to course correct more quickly than I can on that. So I didn't need to save you, even though I tried. The update about Nex Benedict is that Nex Benedict's death was ruled a suicide. And we had talked about Nex Benedict's death and the fight that occurred and the bullying that occurred, because Nex Benedict, of course, is the non-binary student that died one day after the fight that occurred. And it was a brutal fight where it was multiple people beating up on Nex Benedict. And we had talked about some reporting from Judd Luggum where he found there were overlapping content in the statements from the school as well as from the police department that gave the impression that there was some kind of covering your ass happening in terms of protecting the school from liability, or who knows kind of what the goal was, but it just left a negative impression, I think, in the people that heard about this reporting. And so now Nex Benedict's death has been ruled a suicide
by a coroner's office that is most assuredly working in tandem or very closely with the police department that also tried to cover up for the school. So I would reserve judgment on this until some further investigation comes out or information comes public, because it seems suspicious, I guess.
Well, and I think one thing to remember is that this is still a reminder of the consequences of the anti-trans legislation across the country, of the anti-trans rhetoric, and there are real-life consequences to it. The bullying and the attack on Nex Benedict is still an example of the negative ramifications of those things, even if the death was not a result of the beating itself. So thank you very much for that email.
Look, anybody who writes in, anybody who calls in and is willing to share such intimate personal details, we appreciate the effort. We appreciate the communication very much.
Yeah. We also appreciate our Patreon supporters.
Yes.
And we want to give a shout out to our new Patreon supporters, Angela.
L. Loveless.
Teresa A.C. You didn't need to copy the pause. That was my fault. Chuck K. Shout out to Chuck K for becoming a new Patreon supporter. So thank you very much to our Patreon supporters. A perk of Patreon is that you don't have to hear ads on Patreon. You become a Patreon supporter, you get the ad-free version of the show. You don't have to hear any ads. It's just us the whole time.
If you would like to look into, investigate, check out Patreon, go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast, and there, for as little as $2 a month, you can help support this effort and help us move the conversation forward on an episode by episode basis. All right, moving on.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So it's felt like a heavy start to the show, and we like to have some humor in the show. So we're going to kick things off with, I guess, a humorous story. It's kind of dumb. It's about rats, you guys.
It's not necessarily dumb. It is funny. because of the content and the statement made by the police individual, like maybe police chief, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the New Orleans police chief.
Yeah, but also it's serious because it seems like a crumbling infrastructure and they're either misusing the funds they have to run their organization or are being mistreated by the city. I don't know.
Yeah, it's apparently the New Orleans Police Department headquarters that is infested
even better
with rats, and so much so that they're eating the drugs that are that are in the headquarters. Maybe they need to put the drugs somewhere else. Maybe the drugs, they got a taste for it and now they're just really getting in there. But there's one line in particular I think you guys are gonna like.
Katie, rats, roaches, no AC, broken elevators. The NOPD headquarters building here on Broad Street is decaying. That's why the city is looking for a new space, a space where rats don't eat evidence.
The rats eating our marijuana, they're all high.
You heard that right. Rats eating marijuana from the evidence room. NOPD Chief Ann Kirkpatrick says sometimes staff come into work and find rat droppings on their desk.
When we say we value our employees, you can't say that and at the same time allow people to work in conditions that are not acceptable.
For a depleted police department where morale is already low, this work environment does nothing to boost that morale.
Where you work, where you live, if it is not appropriate, is going to always impact morale. So that has been a big factor.
At Monday's crime committee meeting, council members voted to approve the lease to rent a new building. Gilbert Montaño, city chief administrative officer, says it's a 10-year lease and rent will be more than $670,000 annually.
I think it's going to be somewhere between $200,000 to $300,000 to actually physically move them, and then probably an additional amount of money to ensure that we have working desks, chairs, things that they need, networking, and items that would typically go into a move.
He says to fix the current HQ, it'll cost roughly $30 million. So renting a new place is a cheaper option.
Some of the big ticket items, like a brand new air conditioner, brand new elevators, things of those nature, those rack up millions of dollars, frankly.
The new building is on Poydras Street, opposite the Dome. Staff will be based on the upper floors. The plan is to get the keys on May 1st. Katie, the lease now has to go before the full council for final approval. Reporting live, Eleanor Tabone, WWL, Louisiana.
So that sounds like not an Australia news service, but an Australian reporter. And I was going to comment that, you know, it's serious when Australians think that the animals are out of control, because Australia is just a death waiting to happen at the hands of all kinds of crazy creatures.
I would not survive there. I would not be okay. And as many of you know, we started to talk about rats more frequently after we moved to Washington, D.C., where there are a lot of rats. And it's just an everyday part of life now. You see them dead in the gutter, and
just in the middle of the street.
Yeah, in the middle of the street, on the sidewalk, they're everywhere. We were walking through a park one time with our friends that were visiting, and I was like, oh, skip over that rat, and they were horrified. It's something that probably would have made me scream in the past, and now I'm like, oh, look at how they're laying on their back with their teeth poking out with dead.
Well, I'll tell you what, our rats, I mean, they are dead oftentimes, but I'll tell you what, they're not. They're not high.
The rats eating our marijuana, they're all high.
How do they know the rats are loaded? That's what I want to know. Are they acting differently? They show up and they're like eating the donuts and the cops are mad. Like, why are you eating our donuts? You know,
it's got to be the attitude. And you know how people who are just like weed heads, people who are like chronically wake and bake people, they're like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Maybe the rats just have a real laid back attitude and bloodshot eyes.
They're behaving exactly like Jeff Spicoli. That's and they're right. Like, this rat is loaded.
You're ripping my car.
Okay. Well, good luck, New Orleans. I mean, it is disturbing to show up to work and have rat poop on your desk. So that's definitely something that would affect morale, I think.
It's our favorite city.
Yeah, so it is. It is our favorite city. So so clean that up. So there's no way to...
Speaking of rats!
Oh, okay. There is a way. So Don Lemon...
Oh!
Well, I should have started with Elon Musk after that segue. So Elon Musk owns Twitter, also called X, but we don't call it X here. It is called Twitter. And there was a recent announcement made that Don Lemon, formerly of CNN, was going to be given his own show on Elon Musk's platform.
Joining a soon-to-be future colleague, white nationalist Tucker Carlson.
Yes.
Tells you the priorities of rat Don Lemon.
And so they apparently hadn't signed an official contract. Like, there was no actual signature on the contract, but
brilliant move, Don.
There was a public announcement made, and I think up until, like, it was announced that Don Lemon's show was actually canceled, they were not going to be moving forward with it on Twitter, that they had been preparing for it. So it came as a surprise when all of a sudden the plug got pulled on it. And the reason that they pulled the plug is Don Lemon decided to sit down and have an interview with Elon Musk. And first we must talk about how Elon Musk is just so dedicated to free speech and ensuring that the platform that he owns, Twitter, continues to be the public town square online, that everyone can have all these different ideas and they're all represented. But during this conversation with Don Lemon, Elon Musk did not appreciate the topics that were discussed, including Elon Musk propping up racists on his platform and talking about things like the great replacement theory.
Hate speech on the platform is up. Do you believe that X and you have some responsibility to moderate hate speech on the platform? That you wouldn't have to answer these questions from reporters about the great replacement theory as it relates to Democrats?
I don't have to answer these questions.
The great replacement theory as it relates to Jewish people. Do you think that?
I don't have to answer questions from reporters. Don, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked for it. Otherwise, I would not do this interview.
So you don't think, do you think that you wouldn't get in trouble or you wouldn't be criticized for these things?
I'm criticized constantly. I could care less.
Pretty remarkable arrogance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just recalcitrance and just, I don't have to answer any questions about my Nazi-leaning white supremacy views about the great replacement theory, which is a conspiracy that Jews are taking over the world and trying to foist demographic changes upon the world as a tool to change the voting behavior. It's pernicious and gross, and he feels above it all. And the fact that when he's questioned, he pulls the plug on the show that he was going to give Don Lemon tells you everything you need to know about this megalomaniac.
I do think, and Don Lemon is a professional, he's been doing this for a long time, but I found it interesting that he was asking like multiple questions in one, and it kind of gave Elon an out where he was able to focus on the part of the question that he wanted to answer rather than like the great replacement theory part. He was able to then hone in on, oh, the criticism at the end of the question.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfortunate because if you are wanting to hold his feet to the fire and really get an answer about this, then it would be important to really make him uncomfortable. It seemed like he was uncomfortable. So something had happened where it already seemed tense and uncomfortable. And I think maybe, you know, and I've been in these situations before where it's tough to kind of meet them where they are in that tension and really like sit in it. And sometimes you feel pressure to clean it up a little bit. And so maybe Don Lemon was experiencing some of that. But
especially when you're interviewing your paycheck. I mean, Don Lemon gets fired from CNN, gets let go from CNN, which, by the way, reportedly they owe him like $24 million.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's not broke. But what's he do? Immediately, he runs to Elon Musk, the white supremacist, and going to make a colleague out of Tucker Carlson. It just shows you that really there is no principle here. There is no line in the sand. There is no job or duty too degrading for somebody like Don Lemon to go into business and be in league with these kinds of monsters.
Well, and then
gross.
Elon Musk, of course, not only is he in control of this social media platform that has the ability to sway and inform people, and he has used that in a way that does elevate hate speech, does elevate these racist conspiracy theories on the platform. He's also meeting with Donald Trump, and Don Lemon took a moment to ask him about that as well.
You recently met with Donald Trump in Florida. What did you guys talk about?
I was at a breakfast at a friend's place, and Donald Trump came by. That's it.
What did you discuss?
Let's just say he did most of the talking.
Did he ask you for money?
He didn't.
Are you going to loan him money to help pay his legal bills?
I'm not paying his legal bills in any way, shape, or form.
Did he ask you for a donation?
No.
Are you leaning towards anyone?
No.
You're not leaning towards anyone? Because you've been...
Well, let me say I'm leaning away from Biden.
You're leaning...
Oof, that laugh.
He seems... unwell. And I know he was asked about ketamine or drugs or some other thing that really kind of set him off. But he doesn't seem well. And not from a sympathetic viewpoint of, oh, I hope he's okay. It just, this is a guy who is in charge of, who owns outright a major, major mechanism for conversation and the dissemination of ideas and information. And he's leaning away from Biden and trying to minimize a meal he had with Donald Trump. Oh, I was just having breakfast at a friend's house and old Donnie showed up. It's not like when you and I have breakfast or any of us have breakfast and a friend randomly stops by. This is the former president of the United States who's there most certainly to specifically have a conversation with Elon Musk, the richest man on the planet, to get money.
Also, who was the friend? Was it Nick Fuentes? Like who?
Right.
Who was the friend that they were all having breakfast with?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's wildly concerning that this is the person who is running Twitter, who gets to decide what these algorithms do, who gets to make the speech rules when he can't even handle an interview with Don Lemon. I mean, he's that sensitive.
He also bans people who say anything that's even sideways against him. He acts like he's a free speech absolutist, but it's really only views that he appreciates get absolutely locked in with no pushback whatsoever, up to and including the rampant use of the N-word and all kinds of other racist, Nazi-defending, Holocaust-denying nonsense on Twitter. It is just a fucking cesspool over there.
Well, and this is also important because of the conversation that's been happening related to TikTok this week, where the House on Wednesday passed a bill that would basically force TikTok's owner to sell the app or to have it banned in the United States. And there was a recent interview with the former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin under the Trump administration. And apparently he's putting his name out there saying that he's putting a team together to talk about whether or not they will end up purchasing TikTok.
Start with TikTok, because I think we're all trying to understand what's happening here, whether it should be banned, divested, or otherwise, and if it is divested, who may be a potential buyer?
Well, you know, when I was Treasury Secretary, I chaired CFIUS, and CFIUS approved, and I had President Trump sign an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass, and I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok?
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company on something like this in China.
You say, have you already put a group together?
Yeah, well, I'm working
on it. You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but...
Who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but it would be a combination of investors, so there would be no one investor that controlled this. And the issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very practical...
Just what we need. Twitter... owned by a MAGA crazy person, or at the very least, someone steeped in believing as fact wild racist conspiracy theories. Meta, Facebook, is owned by Mark Zuckerberg, who has no dedication, no loyalty, no adherence to the principles of democracy and non-interfering in our democracy. And then we have another MAGA turd who would own TikTok right before an election. Sounds like a recipe for good times for conservatives and the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare. And I mean, 170 million Americans use TikTok. It is very popular with young people. And you have people like Nancy Pelosi during their speech in support of the legislation saying something about like tic-tac-toe and trying to seem like they are really with it and understanding the youngins. And it just doesn't seem like the right move in an election year to be going after this very popular app that is popular with young people. And it's scary to think about MAGA Republicans controlling yet another social media platform that, again, 170 million Americans are using, especially young people, where then they get to control the algorithm and control what you are shown.
Right.
It's very alarming to think that that could be possible.
Yeah, I don't listen. I'm kind of on the fence. I think that there is a definite dangerous element to TikTok. The version that plays in Chinese phones in China is completely different. The things that they see are more uplifting. They're not as addicting. They're not as brain altering. Here, it just the algorithm run wild, and that's a problem. I mean, some of this stuff is up in the purview of parents to lead their kids better. But I get it. But I think I fall on the side of free speech because it is a powerful tool of disseminating useful news and information to a younger generation that's not going to get it from Facebook. They're not going to get it from Twitter. They're not going to get it likely from YouTube. And we need to meet them where they are to counteract misinformation, conspiracy theories, which seem to be like a Kellyanne Conway alternative facts. Look what just happened this week with Dum Dum New York Jet former Green Bay Packer Aaron Rodgers being outed just after he was talked about being a shortlist candidate to be Robert Kennedy Jr.'s vice presidential pick. It tells you how serious that campaign is. And he's been outed as a Sandy Hook truther in the style of Alex Jones.
In 2013, when CNN's Pamela Brown was covering the Kentucky Derby, she was introduced to Rodgers. Hearing that she was a journalist at CNN, Rodgers began attacking the news media for, quote, covering up important stories. Rodgers then brought up the Sandy Hook shooting and said the news media was intentionally ignoring that the shooting wasn't real, that it was a government inside job. I remind you, the shooting, of course, was very real, very tragic. 20 children and 6 adults were murdered that day. When Pamela Brown asked Aaron Rodgers for evidence of what he was talking about, Rodgers then began sharing various theories that have been disproven numerous times by evidence. Rodgers falsely claimed to Pamela Brown that there were men in black in the woods by the school. And he asked if she thought that was odd. Brown says that she found the entire encounter disturbing.
So Aaron Rodgers has responded. He put out a statement on Twitter saying, as I'm on the record saying in the past, what happened in Sandy Hook was an absolute tragedy. I am not and have never been of the opinion that the events did not take place. Again, I hope that we learn from this and other tragedies to identify the signs that will allow us to prevent unnecessary loss of life. My thoughts and prayers continue to remain with the families affected, along with the entire Sandy Hook community, with a heart. And what's notable about this statement is that...
that it's well-written?
Well, no, is that he's not denying the part about him saying that it was an inside job.
Right.
So he's acknowledging that he is on the record saying that it happened, but he's not saying anything about the part where he is alleged to have said it was an inside job. That would be the part that you still need to address.
That it's also, it remains that there is not a single fucking chance that he wrote that he drafted that statement. That is not coming out of the brain of Aaron Rodgers, an unvaccinated idiot who believes that there's some conspiracy afoot to alter his DNA through the COVID-19 vaccine. This is Alex Jones level conspiracism that is dangerous, and he is an influential figure not just in the sports community but as an online doubter of facts and science. It's just another case of people lionizing and idolizing the wrong fucking people.
Yeah, and what's notable about these figures, there's kind of a theme popping up on this episode, is these figures that are enjoying support from the right wing. And it is people who are sympathetic to racist conspiracies. It's people who are sympathetic to vaccine conspiracies.
Yeah.
All of these different conspiracy theories. And of course, you have the more extreme situations, like we have in Oklahoma. We just learned of reporting from, I think, Christopher Mathias in Huffington Post, and then another reporter where we're going to play her news package from NBC News here. But there was actually a man in Oklahoma who participated in the Unite the Right rally, like held the tiki torch.
That's Charlottesville, for those of you who don't track this stuff or retain it in your brains.
Yeah, so this guy who very clearly has white supremacist views, white supremacist ties, Judson Blevins is his name. He was elected a city commissioner in Oklahoma, and there are efforts now underway to try to recall him.
Everybody in this room played a role.
Among those here are 69-year-old Connie Vickers.
I was born and raised here in Enid.
And 74-year-old Nancy Presnell. You
know, I've lived here most of my life.
They're best friends and Democrats, rare in the deeply conservative county. Both retired, but hard at work.
How many doors did you knock on?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was a lot. Enough to get the signatures needed for a recall election of City Commissioner Judd Blevins. This is Judd Blevins in 2017, tiki torch in hand in Charlottesville, Virginia, marching alongside avowed white supremacists and neo-Nazis.
I saw the picture of Judd Blevins with the tiki torch, and I was like just shocked.
The more they looked, the more they found. Blevins had been an active leader in the white nationalist group Identity Europa. According to an analysis of photos, biographical details, and other information, Blevins hid his white nationalist identity behind the online moniker Conway. In private online forums reviewed by NBC News, Blevins, as Conway, posted racist messages and praised Hitler. And yet, when the former Marine ran for city commissioner last year as a conservative Republican,
he won by 36 votes.
Presnell and Vickers are part of the Enid Social Justice Committee, vocal opponents of Blevins since he took office, the group mincing no words on its website, saying Enid has a Nazi problem.
A lot of people don't want to say the word Nazi, but when you see what he did and what he's involved with, you know, it's not name calling, it's what he is and what he believes.
We wanted to ask Blevins what he believes for ourselves, but he denied our multiple requests for interviews. We tried once more outside a city council meeting.
Can I ask, you are a leader in an Oklahoma chapter of a white nationalist organization, and I want to know if you have any explanation to that.
Come here. Why did you march and unite the right? Why did you hold a tiki torch and march as people say Jews will not replace us?
I've been a conservative all my life.
Cindy Allen was editor and publisher of the Enid News and Eagle when Blevins won. Her paper had published a front page story about his past prior to the election. Blevins called it a hit piece.
We followed up many times and he never would answer us.
And yet he won.
He won. There's an opportunity now to address what kind of tolerance of extremism this community is going to have.
Enid's mayor, David Mason, also a conservative Republican, says behind closed doors, Blevins admitted to his involvement in white nationalist activities.
And my follow-up question was, are you still involved with those groups? And he told me I do not have to answer that question. And my thought was, you just did.
Blevins' opponent in the recall election, set for April 2nd, is a Republican, too. She didn't want to talk about the race with us, a race that most here see as squarely about Blevins.
If we vote him in a second time, it probably says a lot about who we are.
That identity is exactly what Vickers and Presnell are working for.
National white supremacist organizations have called you two outrageous Antifa commandos.
Badge of honor.
What happens if you don't win?
We keep putting up a fight. We're not going to put up with it quietly.
Fighting, they say, for the soul of their city. Brandi Zadrozny, NBC News, Enid, Oklahoma.
And this was a lengthier news package, and so the beginning part of it was cut off, but the beginning part of it was members of the community who are leading the effort to get him out of his position were meeting in private. It was not, like, widely publicized where they were going to be. And that is, I mean, that says something right there, that you are leading an effort to recall someone who has active white supremacist ties, active ties to these white supremacist organizations and these beliefs. And you have to be careful about the meeting place that you're at and how public you are with where you're meeting. I mean, that's disturbing. It's scary. And that these women that are leading the charge here are being attacked as Antifa when they simply don't want a white supremacist to have a position of power in their city.
Someone praising Hitler.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it bears mentioning and repeating and reminding the audience that infiltrating government posts up and down ballot, up and down the from local to federal, has been part of the standard operating procedure of white nationalists, neo-Nazis, white supremacist organizations since the 90s, even before that. It has been part of their mission statement to do this, so then they can impose racist and white supremacist neo-Nazi policies and ideals into the color of law. This is just a guy who got caught. There are most assuredly dozens, if not hundreds more, who are in government right now that need to be outed. And I'm glad that the ladies consider it a badge of honor to be called Antifa, because that is exactly what they're being, anti-fascist.
Yeah, and it's disturbing to watch that footage, too, of how aggressive he was with the reporter in not answering questions, feeling like he doesn't have to answer these questions about being a white supremacist and having these white supremacist ties. And it's what we always talk about. These people are not going to be public about it. They're not Richard Spencer about it. They want to keep it undercover because they know if it's exposed, then they are going to lose their positions of power.
Yeah. Which is, again, going back to what I was talking about, that's why it's been on the sly and quiet up to this point, and now it's becoming more and more accepted because Donald Trump gave these assholes permission to be the worst versions of themselves publicly.
Right. So we have Republicans want you to work until the day that you die, Republicans supporting white supremacists in positions of power. And then we have Republicans in Arizona this time voting against protecting access to birth control. And this was the Right to Contraception Act in Arizona. The proposal, according to local reporting, sought to protect the ability of Arizonans to obtain all forms of birth control, including Plan B, and guarantee the right of healthcare providers to prescribe contraceptives or give information about them to patients. It would also have outlawed any attempt to limit or infringe on a person's ability to access contraceptives or a doctor's ability to offer them. And the Republicans in the state said no.
State Republicans in the House block an effort to protect birth control in our state. Democratic Rep. Stephanie Stahl Hamilton of Tucson made a motion to adopt a temporary rule to bring her bill to the floor for a vote. She says the bill, though, has not been assigned to any committees for consideration. Governor Hobbs urged members of the legislature to pass the Right to Contraception Act, and every Republican voted no.
The topic of this bill is so important that I believe it deserves a hearing. It is a topic that is relevant. It is a topic that deserves robust conversation. And it is a topic that most of the people in Arizona support.
Democrats have expressed concern about reproductive rights following the recent Alabama Supreme Court IVF ruling and also following the U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade.
Again, this should be another reminder to the audience that when Republicans say that they're not going to be coming after contraception, here you go. This is a state level thing, but this is where it starts. It's a trial balloon of sorts where they get an idea of how the electorate's going to respond. The electorate is going to respond. And then they move forward at a federal level, just like they said, oh, no, 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 Roe v. Wade, that just has to do with the states. Now states can decide. We're not going to make it federal. And what's happening? They want to make a federal ban. They want to ban abortion federally. They want to restrict or ban access to birth control and contraception. This is it. This is the dystopia they want to foist upon us because of their white Christian nationalism. It's just the way it is.
And it's also exposes the lie that is what they believe about abortion. Because if you believed that abortion was murder and that every time someone has an abortion, they're killing a life, then you would do anything to stop that from happening, including supporting birth control, which prevents the pregnancy from taking place in the first place,
right,
and would reduce the need for an abortion, eliminate the need for an abortion. But no, you have people like State Senator Sonny Borelli, the number two Republican in the state Senate, who, when responding to a question about whether he would oppose future efforts to restrict emergency contraceptive in the state, he said, quote, "Like I said, Bayer Company invented aspirin. Put it between your knees." That's what he said. Yes. So that's what we are dealing with. That is the number two Republican in the state Senate in the state of Arizona. So, Jesse, when you say that they're testing the waters here, how is the electorate going to respond? We're hoping that listeners listening to this right now who live in Arizona are going to respond by being loud.
Yes.
And aggressive about what it is that they support in their state. And this Sonny Borelli, dear Lord, that statement needs to be in political ads. It needs to be running in commercials. Everyone needs to know that this guy said to put an aspirin between your knees.
And look, this needs to be dealt with by Democrats at the highest levels of our government better, more aggressively. We've talked about on this show many times that Joe Biden has an issue with the word abortion. He says women's right to choose. He uses all of these dancing around the actual issue terms rather than talking about abortion, when abortion in this election cycle is more of a winning issue than it has ever been, because people have witnessed the chicanery, the ill will intended upon America from Republicans. Use the word. Talk about it as it is. Let's not dance around it and try to be cute.
Yeah. And the administration did do something positive in that regard, where Vice President Kamala Harris made a historic visit. I think it's the first time a sitting president or vice president has been to an actual abortion clinic. She went to an abortion clinic. And I wasn't all that impressed with her statement, mostly because of what you're talking about, Jesse, where like she would talk about the elected officials standing in the way of reproductive freedom. But she wouldn't say Republican elected officials or Republicans. And I think especially in this, you know, we're only a few months away from the election, honestly, that really needs to be something that they talk about, that it's Republicans. You need to make it clear for people,
yeah,
who are the elected officials that are standing in the way. But there was an important speech that was given by a doctor who spoke after Vice President Kamala Harris, Dr. Sarah Traxler. And she started it off by saying she's a proud abortion provider. And this was really powerful because the whole time she's talking in a really direct way about abortion and abortion rights and how important they are, right behind her is Vice President Kamala Harris.
I'm Sarah Traxler. I'm the Chief Medical Officer here at Planned Parenthood North Central States. I'm a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist with a subspecialty in complex family planning, and I also have my Master's of Science in Health Policy. I am a proud abortion provider, and I'm honored that Vice President Kamala Harris has visited our clinic today. It's a historic moment, and one that demonstrates how critically important access to reproductive health care is to people and their families across the country. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. After the Dobbs decision a year and a half ago, Minnesota has become a bastion of access for abortion care. But abortion rights are not only a Minnesota issue. It is a national issue. Our Planned Parenthood has seen a 25% increase in abortions here in Minnesota since Roe was overturned. We've seen nearly 100% increase in patients coming here from outside of our state. This is not by accident. Surrounding states have been limiting and banning abortion, while Minnesota, with the help of our governor, has been increasing access. Since Roe was overturned, I've cared for patients from everywhere, from nearby states like South Dakota and North Dakota and Wisconsin, but from faraway states like Texas, Alabama, Wyoming, Florida, Oklahoma, Missouri, and the list goes on. I've seen patients who've flown from places like Louisiana only to have me tell her that her complex pregnancy condition would keep her from having her abortion here with me, forcing her to continue a dangerous pregnancy because hospital-based care was not available to her in her home state. Traveling to access essential health care can be intimidating and overwhelming. It is not an easy thing to do, as we have all pretended that it is. Like the experience of our patient who traveled from a small rural town and became lost in downtown Minneapolis with a dead cell phone after her flight landed. We were able to get her a Lyft driver, our patient navigators, and she described that Lyft driver as a savior for her. And like our patient, who drove hundreds and hundreds of miles through blizzard conditions just to get her abortion. Our new abortion landscape is difficult. It is dangerous, and it is putting my patients and healthcare providers at severe risk. I've talked to my colleagues practicing in states where abortion is now illegal, and they are unnecessarily struggling with decisions around providing ethical, proper medical care and conflicting with the law. This should never happen. Thankfully, providing abortion care has gotten less complicated in Minnesota. Here, I'm trusted as a provider and an expert to work with my patients to provide the best care possible. To know that I'm trusted to do my job is a comfort to me, but it should be the standard everywhere. Private medical decisions should be made between patients and their doctors, without interference from politicians or the protesters standing outside on the street in front of our clinic today.
And that says it all right there. I think it's important for the administration to really go hard on this issue and to have Vice President Kamala Harris standing behind this doctor as she's speaking very directly about the real ramifications, the real harms that are happening as a result of these abortion bans. There was coughing in the background. I don't know if you heard that. And that was Kamala Harris starting to have a coughing fit. And
it was like a scene out of Veep.
It was a scene out of Veep. I was like, oh my God, this is like Selena Meyer level stuff happening right now. But we've all been there, right? You get that tickle in your throat and you're trying to hold it back and it just comes out of nowhere.
Let me drive home a point. We've been talking about why it's so important that our political leaders, our Democratic political leaders, use the word abortion and talk about this in real terms and not dance around it with right to choose or these other nebulous terms. Attacking, random political leaders need to do the right thing rather than calling out Republicans for doing what they do. And the reason is that just a few episodes ago, we talked about either a Washington Post or a New York Times article where they highlighted certain voters. And there was at least one of them that said they thought Joe Biden was responsible for the end of abortion in her state because he happens to be president while the Supreme Court was in session making that ruling. This is why it's important for Joe Biden to use the language that's correct and Kamala Harris to use the language that's correct to make sure that if there's any chance that someone out there who is ignorant about how our politics works know where they stand.
Yeah.
It's so critical.
And that fits with the point of the previous episode, too, where we talked about how people go off vibes. And I mean, we would hope that everyone is very informed and can dedicate a certain number of hours during the week to educating themselves about political issues and current events and what's happening in the news. But that's not realistic because people are busy and they have a lot of things to do and they can't be keeping up with everything. And so a lot of people go off vibes of political candidates.
Yeah.
And that's how they decide who to vote for. And what can you do to help ensure that people are getting the right vibe from you? Speak clearly and directly about what it is that you do and do not support and who it is that is standing in the way. So this was definitely a positive move. I'm happy that Kamala Harris is, I think she's going on some sort of like reproductive freedom tour or something. So I don't know if she's going to continue to show up at abortion clinics, but it's a historic move and I'm super happy to see the progress.
Yeah. Let's finish with this story about Ilhan Omar. There's been a lot of talk out there about progressives and members of the squad and and leftists who aren't going to vote for Joe Biden. And there's been protest votes in Michigan, especially, although Ilhan Omar is not from Michigan. She's from Minnesota. But in the Muslim community, Dearborn, Michigan especially, in direct relation to the war on Gaza, the assault upon the Palestinian people, the 30-plus thousand human beings that have been eradicated, eliminated from existence because of the Netanyahu government. And I want to impress upon everyone that it's fine to make your vote be heard in a primary, but there are stakes that are too high to fuck around with trying to be cute in a general election. And I'm very, my spirits are buoyed and my confidence is lifted knowing that Ilhan Omar, among the most liberal members of the House of Representatives, also believes that.
On the president and this election, which is, as you point out, a really important one, you didn't vote for President Biden or for uncommitted in Minnesota's primary. The uncommitted vote was a big part of that primary in your home state. I wonder, if the election were held today, would you vote for Joe Biden? Can you confirm that he would have your vote today?
Of course. Democracy is on the line. We are facing down fascism. And I personally know what my life felt like having Trump as the president of this country. And I know what it felt like for my constituents and for people around this country and around the world. We have to do everything that we can to make sure that does not happen to our country again.
And do you think your constituents ultimately will come to the same conclusion that you did, you know, the tens of thousands who voted uncommitted as a protest against the president?
Well, the uncommitteds have been very clear. They want a change in policy, and we've seen that. Within 3 days, you had the vice president using the word ceasefire. We now have the president saying there is a red line if Israel goes into Rafah that he is going to condition aid. So there has been a significant progress. I think it is the responsibility of every citizen of this country that cares for the humanity of all to continue to push this administration to do what it can do to end the onslaught that Palestinians are living through every single day.
All right.
And that's a great point. And it reminds me that Donald Trump is not someone who is going to be persuadable.
Yeah.
There are not going to be protest votes that will convince Donald Trump that he should have different policy. Donald Trump's going to have the policies that are most extreme, the ones that people put in his ear. And President Biden is someone who can be persuaded. And
he, as evidenced by the shift
right,
that we've witnessed.
He may not be going far enough, but...
Or quick enough.
But we continue to keep that pressure on because he is persuadable and he can change these policies and he will. And we just need to keep pushing.
And ultimately, like Representative Ilhan Omar said, that look, democracy is on the line. It's not hyperbole to say that. Donald Trump tried to end democracy on January 6, 2021, in the lead up to that date, and even after, tried to end democracy. He's continuing to do so. He's placed an election denier as general counsel or chief counsel for the election integrity division of the Republican National Committee that is now run by his family. It's not looking good if Donald Trump, it's looking dystopian if Donald Trump wins the election.
Yeah.
And it is too important. You can't just say, oh, it's a lesser of two evils, because it's not. It is beyond that. And we need to do right by people who aren't in the same privileged position as us, who will be impacted far greater if a Donald Trump gets back into office. So,
well, and Ilhan Omar spoke to that, too. I think you heard that, where she said she remembers what life was like for her under a Donald Trump administration. And so, yeah, it is important if you are a member of a privileged community to use that privilege in a way where you are taking up for people that will be put in harm's way by a Donald Trump administration. And I'm glad that Ilhan Omar brought that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to leave you there. We love you and appreciate you. We would invite you to check out patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. Think about becoming a member of the Patreon family, helping move the conversation forward on an episode-by-episode basis. We love and appreciate you very much. We'd love to hear from you as well. The phone number is 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollemore.com. We will see you next time. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollemore, and this has been I Doubt It.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.